Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA journalist and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. Hope everyone is doing well out there. What a time to be alive. It is UFC 313 Fight Week, another pay-per-view in the books, the UFC's third of the year. I can't wait for this one. I know not the most stacked fight card in the world, but when you get an Alex Pereira main event, as many as it seems like there has been in the past year and a half, still feels special, still feels like we are witnessing one of the biggest stars in the sport, and of course, one of the very best fighters in the sport. Alex Pereira putting his light heavyweight championship on the line for the fourth time against Magomed Ankalaev, a fight a lot of us, myself included, have been waiting a very, very long time for, and it is finally here, just days away now. I'll be heading to Las Vegas on Thursday to help out MMA Junkie with some of the coverage, and it is a loaded fight week press conference of UFC 313 fighters on Thursday, a UFC 314 press conference for that massive stacked card headlined by Alex Pereira versus Diego Lopez going down on Friday, and then all the other stuff, official weigh-ins, ceremonial weigh-ins, and then fight night. Of course, we'll have all the coverage for that over on MMA Junkie, maybe a little bit here on the Bonfire YouTube channel as well, if that's the platform you're following the show on, and appreciate everyone following and supporting the show. It means the world to me. We are doing some great things right now, it feels like, and building some momentum. That is credit to the support you have all shown, and of course, the great guests that we have had on the program as well to share their insights. And speaking of great guests, we have another one here today. It will be Paul Felder, the UFC commentator, retired lightweight contender, co-host of the Believe You Me podcast, a man of many hats, and I think one of the greatest minds in mixed martial arts at this point. I think Paul is one of the very best UFC commentators right now, perhaps even the best of all. He will be here to build a little UFC 313 preview within a greater topic we're going to have, and that is going to be ranking the next 10 UFC main events slash title fights. The UFC has a pretty loaded docket already set up between this weekend, UFC 313, and May 10th, UFC 315. So Paul is going to come on here. We are going to rank those fights on a criteria that you'll hear me lay out for him from number 10 to number one. It was a great time had by all. Some great fights coming up, and Paul and I are going to touch on all of these upcoming headliners as well as preview the UFC 313 main and co-main events. So we will take a quick break, and I'll be right back with Paul. We're back here on the Bonfire Podcast with a first-time guest of the show. It is UFC commentator, co-host of the Believe You Me podcast, Mr. Paul Felder. Paul, thank you for being here. How are you, man?
I'm good, dude. And I was just saying, you know, before we even started, thank you for your persistence on tracking me down. Any of my friends would tell you that I'm one of the bigger pains in the butt to get a hold of. It's something I need to work on. 2025, that should have been one of my New Year's resolutions, is getting back to the people, because you're my boy. We've hung out over the years many times, and I've always enjoyed your work and appreciated you. Yeah, so I'm glad I get to jump on, dude.
No, I appreciate you being here, man. And it's all good. I know you've been had a very busy February. So if you're just like relaxing and chilling, you called three shows. Was that like the, and you know, there's different corners of the globe. Was that the biggest like sprint you've done on the commentary side, you think, since you've really gone into this?
Since probably when we were in pandemic mode and we were in Fight Island, but even that was different, right? Because you're just there anyway. So there's nothing else to do other than to get ready for calling fights. This is definitely the longer stretch I've had in probably years. And the thing that made it even crazier was I worked for the TV show Hacks, where they're doing season four, and I was in an episode. So the only time that we could figure out working it out was the day after I got back from Saudi Arabia. So I landed on Monday evening from Saudi Arabia, did wash, packed a bag, 8:30 a.m. was on a flight to LA, was there for 2 days, back home, back to Vegas, home for a few days, out to Seattle. So, but hey, I can't complain. I mean, it was a great rip and obviously means money in the bank when I'm working that many shows, plus the TV show. So, but yeah, now March, much more chill. The next fight card is not until London. So I got a nice little break hanging out with the family, see some of my friends and stuff that I haven't seen for a while. So it's good.
Love seeing you that active in the booth. What's the biggest challenge, I guess, between like, besides the time changes and dealing with all that, but having the back-to-back cards with different commentary teams and everything? Is it just like making sure all the research is done properly, or is it making sure you have the right chemistry? Like what's the hardest part about doing that many events in a row?
The chemistry stuff is super easy. Like I get along with everybody that I work with, whether it's Laura, Bisbing, DC, like I love all those guys and they all bring something new to the table every time we work with each other. You know, if it's DC, I know I get to slide in on a lot of the striking stuff and he's going to cover a big portion of the wrestling and grappling exchanges. And obviously me and Mike work together on the podcast now as well. So that's just like, we're just continuing our conversations from Monday, basically, when we get to work together. So really it's the prep. It's really making sure that I give these fighters their due diligence and actually study them and have stuff for the walkouts and just get prepared. Because if it's a, you know, 13, 14 fight card, it's a lot of fights to go through, and making sure that I'm in a place where I can do the fighter meetings. It's easier when we're overseas because the fighter meetings are in person. That's always preferable. You know, when you got to do the Zoom calls and stuff like that, it's those can get a little tedious because I'm just sitting on the other side of this room on my couch when I'm doing that. And it's tough. I hear my kids running around upstairs and the dogs are trying to go outside and want to get out. And I'm stuck on the laptop for 5 hours, but yeah. I mean, I can't complain, right? I'm not working behind a desk doing 40 hours a week. I get to travel the world and freaking call fights, dude. So you know how it is. It's living the dream.
For sure. The chemistry with Bisbing from the booth to the podcast has been great. And I guess, do you only do podcasts with people named Mike? Because you had Mike Bisbing, and you Mike Bisbing. Now you're here with Mike Vaughn.
That's it. Everyone else can take a back seat. Screw everybody else. If your name's Mike, then you know, I got time for you.
There you go. So obviously it is UFC 313 fight week, and I thought this was a great time to kind of not only look at this event but go beyond. This is a really rare time, Paul, where we actually have like three straight months of announced main events. We know where things are happening, who's fighting, kind of getting back to like pre-COVID types of knowing like what's happening super far out. So that's nice, not only from like our side being able to plan travel and all that kind of stuff, but just to kind of forecast on the upcoming events. So there's 10 main events and or title fights scheduled. Before we get into that, though, one fight that is obviously not scheduled at this point and is relevant is John Jones versus Tom Aspinall. Bringing this up because as of today, Paul, Tuesday, March 4th, 2 years ago, John Jones today beat Ciryl Gane to win the vacant heavyweight championship. He's been champion for, what did I write down, 757 days. Tom Aspinall has been champion for 475 days. So that is 62.8% of John Jones's title reign. Tom Aspinall has been the interim champion. This week, Tom put out that video saying, John's side is holding it up. I'm willing to fight someone else, ready to move on. I don't know. What do you make of this? Like, I think this kind of stuff has been talked about ad nauseum, but are you feeling uneasy more than ever about this fight now?
Yeah, I'm starting to get a little nervous for it. And now with Pereira getting ready to fight, and if he gets a big win, I was talking about it to Bisbing the other day. Like, I think he's going to get on the mic and he's going to say, I want to fight John Jones. And if that happens and gets people enticed about it, then there's a chance that maybe, you know how the UFC is, like they want the biggest, the best fights. And if that seems to be the way that everyone is wanting the fight to go, that maybe that happens. And that's a fight that I would love to see, but not when there's somebody like Tom Aspinall, who is exciting, is the next generation of these heavyweights, and is somebody that I think most of us think really could beat John. I'm not saying he will, but like, if there's a guy out there right now, I think we're all looking at him going, this guy's got what it takes to be the guy to do it. He's super fast. He hits hard as shit. I'm sorry. Can I say shit?
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? So that's the fight we want to see. That's the biggest fight to make. So the fact that John is still just kind of MIA, and he had that Instagram live where he seemed intoxicated, and it's like, oh no, you know, giving him too much time again. The more time we give him in between fights, the chances of him doing something silly goes way up. So hopefully we hear something soon, man. But I like that Tom's kind of got the right attitude where he's like, look, no matter what, I'm the one who's going to be fighting for the undisputed belt. Whether John vacates it or fights me, that's his next move. But if I'm Tom, you get frustrated. You want to have a fight lined up, right? You don't want to be spending a chunk of your prime waiting for somebody. That's the worst thing. You want to keep this guy active. You want to get him in there. So hopefully something happens, dude. Because come on, I want to see that freaking fight.
Yeah. And I was like a little tongue in cheek off the top. The events we're going to be talking to span through May 10th. I don't think even the most optimistic person thought the fight would happen before then, after November. Yeah. But as we start getting into like the summer schedule, I mean, I've heard pay-per-view main events potentially through like June. So yep. I'm not hearing anything about what they're doing as far as the John Jones fight. So I don't know. I kept saying for weeks on the show, I'm like, the fact that Tom is being really quiet is like a good sign to me, because he was making videos saying like he's ducking. I feel like he's just being quiet, waiting for the UFC to do their thing, and then we'll get an announcement. But then he puts out this video, and I'm like, okay, now I'm concerned again. So I really don't know.
Just shows that there's still nothing. Yeah. And you know, the crazy thing is, it is all in John's court, because he's the one that has negotiating power, right? He's the one that can be like, no, I want all this money. Whereas Tom's like, look, until I go and fight you and beat you, the ball's in your court. I'm the interim champ. I'm not the one that can be like, no, I want $25 million to fight John, because they'll just say, okay, no, you're out. It's this other guy that can jump in. So it really is all on Jones. And I'm just starting to worry that, man, maybe I don't ever want to say anybody like John Jones is scared, but it's starting to look like it looks like he's ducking him.
Yeah. Is there, I mean, and people are obviously going to get annoyed with that term, say John Jones would never be scared of anyone, but I guess would a better way to put it be like, he's being very selective with his career management at this point.
I think he knows he's at the end. And I think he's not scared, but I think he knows that if there's a chance that things can go sideways and he can end up looking really bad for maybe his last fight, the guy that's going to do that is Tom. Alex Pereira is as scary as they come, but John's toolbox against him, there's many more ways for him to win. If he really wrestles Alex hard, he can probably either sub him or beat him up on the ground. Whereas Tom, I think, is much more well-rounded. He can wrestle, and he's huge.
Yep. We want to see it. We'll see. Maybe if Alex Pereira goes in and then defends 20 Magomed Ankalaev takedowns and just looks insane with his defensive.
Yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah. I don't see that happening, but nevertheless. Okay, Paul, we'll see what happens with that. But yeah, time is running short. I think Tom Aspinall's fought about 3 minutes in that 475 days.
Crazy, so dude.
We need more from this guy.
Crazy.
But yeah. Okay. As we get into the list here, Paul, you know, as I said, there's 10 scheduled main events / title fights spanning from this weekend, UFC 313 to UFC 315. You know, people could look at the schedule if they want to see before we get into it. We'll list them all as well here. I will give you the floor. We'll start from the bottom up. I do think we're going to have the same number 10 here, but I'll allow you to read it off. What is your number 10 anticipated main event coming up right now?
Number 10 coming in, I've got Marvin Vettori and Roman Dolidze 2. Not that it's not going to be a good scrap. I think it will be. But as far as just marquee value and, you know, really getting eyeballs on this one, I just don't think this one really stands out all that much. And the fact that it's a rematch between two guys that really aren't all that high up in the rankings, that's why I've got this one there. And not to mention that for some reason, Marvin Vettori, Mike, he does not like me whatsoever. So he has been vocal about that in years past. I feel like we've got it squashed enough where we can be cordial with each other, but it's no secret that we're not best buddies. And for that reason, yeah, he's sitting in my number 10 spot.
There you go. And I forgot to prelude for the people. The criteria I gave Paul, I guess, for this list as we go into it was number one, your personal interest in these matchups. Number two, potential stakes for the fight, what it could lead to for the winner. And then number three, the in-cage potential. Could it maybe be, you know, two lesser guys in terms of divisional relevance, but it has the potential to be an incredible fight. I think under those guidelines, I also had that rematch scheduled for UFC Fight Night 254 next week, March 15th at my number 10. Just again, a very apexy main event, middleweights, a rematch no one really asked for. I guess the first fight like was a little bit of weird circumstances. I think Dalidze was a late notice replacement for someone. I think that was in London. But yeah, we haven't seen Marvin Vettori in about 2 years now. And he was a guy that was really at the top of that division for a long time, had like the Adesanya rivalry, but couldn't get over that hump. And then you thought maybe the champion's changing, he could maybe get back in there, do something again, but just not has not panned out for him. And he's now 36, and this feels like a very defining fight for him.
Yeah, this would be a big one for him. He needs to get this one, especially if he wants to just get more fights, stay relevant in this division, because it has. You're right. It's kind of moving on without him, no doubt about it. And at 36, you know how that is. Once you get over that 35 hump, that's when things – not that you can be an exception. You can be an exception. I mean, another guy on our list is Bilal at some point, and he's a guy – he's, what, 37 and champion now. So, I mean, DC's done it. Michael Bisping's done it. It can be done, Glover Teixeira, but it's definitely a rare occurrence to see these guys really climb back up into the tippy top of their division.
Yeah, especially when you've taken a fight where you absorbed the most significant strikes ever in a middleweight fight like you did against Jared Cannonier. That feels crazy. Like it maybe changed him a bit. Yeah. Okay, moving on to number nine here, Paul. I think we are aligned on this one as well. So I will read this one off. At number nine, the UFC on ESPN 64 main event, March 29th in Mexico City. It is Brandon Moreno versus Steve Ersig. Good fight for the flyweight division. I guess the things that do appeal to me about this, can Brandon Moreno finally win a freaking fight in Mexico City? I'm pretty sure he is 0-3 there. Wasn't crazy. Keen to do this again, but they keep calling his number and I guess making it financially worth it for him. But yeah, this is a one that I think he needs to win, and he's fighting a Steve Ersig who is on back-to-back losses and really needs this one as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And for that reason, I do think I've got it at number nine as well, but I do think it will be an exciting fight. I mean, anytime Moreno's in there, he usually brings in Steve Ersig when he's on his game. We've seen him at his best in that championship fight that he lost, razor close fight to the champion. And, you know, and then he has some, you know, another setback after that. But I think this kid, if he can really dig in and have a fun scrap of Moreno and get a win, he puts himself right back in the mix at flyweight. And I like both of those guys a whole lot. Hopefully they don't see this and think, oh, these guys think we suck. It's like, no, that fight's going to be a lot of fun. But again, it's another one. We've seen Moreno in Mexico City in main events and things like that before. This isn't anything new or spectacular. I think it's deserving to be on that in that spot, and it'll be a lot of fun. But good luck to all those guys that have to fight in Mexico City. Even jogging there is a challenge, man. It's so tough with that altitude. So all those fighters on that card, please do some sort of altitude training or get a sleep tent, because you're going to feel it. If you're trying to convince yourself that you're not, you're wrong.
Yeah. Would it be a good one for Kelvin Gastelum to stay at 180 or at 170, not 185, to make you work hard to be ready for that elevation?
Yeah, it's going to be brutal. Yeah. And I told Joe Pfeiffer that too. When I see him in the gym a couple times, I'm like, bro, what are you doing? And he is sleeping in an altitude 10. He's doing all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, all right, thank God you're doing something, because if you don't knock him out early, buddy, you're going to be in a grind, because no matter what, at 8,000 plus feet, it's just misery.
Mm-hmm. Is there a Brandon Moreno, I thought, looked exceptional in his comeback fight that we had in Edmonton back in October or whenever it was, in November. Yep. He's looked great. It seems like he's re-energized, all that kind of stuff. Is there a mental hurdle here, though, with the winless in Mexico City thing? He's been only fighting the best guys, all that, but like, you look at that and it must be a little bit grim.
Bro, I think it's also that you know, he's just being put on the face of Mexican MMA, and they want him there so much to draw attention, and that brings a lot of pressure to it. And the fact that it is at altitude, and he has to change the way that he wants to train. He likes to train in Vegas. He likes to have his own team and camp around him. And then, you know, it's financial burden. It's bringing your whole team to altitude, prepping in altitude. It's just so much that goes into that. And then again, like, how many people are hitting up somebody like Brandon Moreno when he's in Mexico City and he's getting ready for a main event, and he's got to do all the press that goes with it? Main event somewhere else, not as big of a deal for him. He can kind of slip under the radar, just do the media that he has to do. But when you're the guy, you're the Mexican fighter on the marquee there in your home country, it's a lot. I think that's what really gets to a guy like that. Some people handle that home advantage well and make it work, and I think sometimes it breaks guys mentally.
Okay, on to number eight. This is where I think we're going to start having some splintering in our list here, Paul. And I have a feeling you're going to have this one much higher than I did. So I'll say my number eight here, and you can hold off on sharing exactly where you have it until we get there. But it is Leon Edwards versus Sean Brady at number eight for me, which, again, great fight. And we're not like, this is the best the UFC has to offer here, right? These are main events. These are title fights. So we're not saying any of these are bad or whatever. We're just ranking our level of interest and, you know, all that, dividing the distinguishments of greatness between all these fights. So, yeah, this is an interesting one. Obviously, not the fight we were supposed to get. Leon Edwards still headlining in London, big deal. Sean Brady, a huge opportunity for him. So I think, yeah, this is an interesting fight, but I just thought there was a little more layers of fascination to me with that. So I don't know if you want to comment on it, you can, or we can hold off until.
I'll comment on that. I mean, you'll see where this fight is on my list, and you'll know exactly why. I mean, I'm wearing the Philadelphia Eagles hat. I'm obviously from Philly, and I've known Sean since he was a teenager and have been able to be a part and watch the rise to this kid. So he's going to be high on my list because one of the criteria obviously was personal reasons. And I can't put my boy that far down. I understand what you're coming from as somebody that's looking at it as not a personal friend of the guy. So no problem with that. For me, number eight is going to be Jamahal Hill and Khalil Roundtree. Again, I think this is going to be an awesome scrap. I think they're going to beat the living crap out of each other. I think it's fun. But for me, you know, both guys really desperate and needing of proving themselves again in there. Not so much for Khalil. He's coming off that fight with the champ. And goddamn, did he have a good showing against one of the baddest, scariest dudes. But yeah, that one just, again, it is a little low. I've had a lot, and I'm boys with Jamahal too, and I've got a lot of high expectations for him, but he needs to go out there and get a win, most important than anything. So for me, it's really just the stakes are high for him to just go and get a W.
Yeah, we could talk a little bit more about this one now. I had it higher on my list, actually, inside my top five. I'll reveal where later. But yeah, this is very good. Two recent light heavyweight title challengers, Hill, former champ. But when I saw this, I was like, ooh, this is a risky one for Jamahal here, right? Yeah. Like, if you were advising him, would you be like, man, this is maybe wait a little longer out sidelined? I know he hasn't been happy with the inactivity with the injuries and stuff, but this is a huge roll of the dice for Jamahal, I feel like.
Yeah, I also agree. When I saw this one, I'm like, man, they are not giving him any layups, right? They're not giving him any easy fights to take on. Khalil Roundtree is an absolute savage, and I think he's only going to have more confidence, even though he's coming off a loss. You can only have more confidence when you go that deep with the champ, and you give him some work, right? Land some good shots, and goddamn, does he show that he's got toughness. And I think he's just mentally in a good spot, where Jamahal Hill, I don't know so much where he's at. You know, I think he really thought he was going to bounce back in that last one. And then another one, though, that was a crazy fight between him and Yuri. But again, getting put out, those things add up. And when that happens in sequence like that, I start to worry about a guy's, not even his chin necessarily, but just your mental, you know, conditioning and where you're going to be when the fight starts getting tough again. So I totally agree. That's a tough one for Jamahal.
Mm-hmm. That's the main event, UFC Fight Night 256 on April 26th in Kansas City. Sick. What do you have more intrigue in, a Roundtree versus Pereira 2 fight or a Hill versus Pereira 2 fight, assuming Alex Pereira continues to be the champ and defends in this weight class?
That's a good question. based on how those fights went, just based on how they went, I have more intrigue right now to see Khalil Roundtree get back in there. Not that I want him to win, but if we're thinking about how the fight went, yeah. I'd like to see him, having been in there for four rounds with him and doing well in moments of that fight, what adjustments he could make potentially to get back in there.
Yeah, it would be super interesting. I mean, I think if Jamal had beat Jiří, the answer might be flipped there, being like, exactly. Oh, this is going to solidify it. But yeah, there was all the stuff at the PI and just all these comments from Jamal. If he had actually backed it up in the cage with that one, I think we have a huge rematch on our hands. But that loss, I think, deflated it a little bit. So he needs to rebuild. Yep. Is what it is. That's how the sport goes. Okay, that was both of our number eight. So on to number seven, where I believe we might be aligned again, Paul. I will give you the floor for number seven.
Number seven, I'm going to go with Valentina Shevchenko taking on Manon Fiore. And I only say this one here because I am intrigued by it, and I love seeing Shevchenko fight, and I think Manon Fiore is truly the contender that deserves to be in there. Mm-hmm. But when I thought there was potentially going to be a super fight getting lined up between Shevchenko and I'm blanking right now.
Zhang Weili.
Yeah, I thought that would be a lot of fun. So this one kind of was like, oh, all right, maybe after this, that's something. Mm-hmm. If Shevchenko can defend and go on, that would be a lot of fun. But Manon Fiore is a beast, man. She's a tough one to deal with. But again, you know, it didn't jump off at me when I looked at this list. And this is the co-main or the main event?
Yeah, co-main event of UFC 315, which is on May 10th in Montreal. I was actually just out there last week in Montreal. They did like an on-sale press conference with all the four people on that card, and Valentina seemed very locked in. At least there is some like fun around how this fight was made. Like, you know, Manon really wanted it, and she was saying like, take the fight and I'll retire if I lose, which Valentina said she expects her to honor.
Wow.
That bet. So hopefully that was Manon writing her own tweets, and maybe not her like
management didn't throw that out there.
Yes,
somebody's getting fired.
But you could see it, like Valentina was a little annoyed they didn't have a proper translator for Manon. She's like, it would be nice to know what she was saying up there. And I'm like, well, I thought French would be one of the like 10 languages you speak, Valentina, but apparently it's not. So
yeah, that's crazy. That girl does speak so many languages.
I'm
still not convinced she's not like a secret spy somewhere and doing assassinations while she's on the road getting ready for fight camps.
Yeah. I mean, at the time of this recording, this is the only women's UFC title fight that's currently booked right now. So that gives it, I guess, some credence to it. And again, very good Fiore, a very deserving title.
I was supposed to call this one too originally, but my daughter's birthday is literally that Friday. So I was talking to Candido and I was like, dude, I want to call a pay-per-view, of course, but what do you think? And he's like, no, you got to be there for your kids. We'll get you another pay-per-view during the summer or something like that. So I had to sit this one out, and I was bummed. I love going to Canada, man. I always have a good time when we're up there.
Yeah, with Bilal headlining too. So
I know, and I didn't know that at the time when I got the offer to call it. I might have had to talk to the family had I known ahead of, you know, had known at that time that that's what Bilal would be headlining. But it's better to be sitting on the couch when your friends are fighting. Unfortunately, I will be calling Sean's fight. So that's going to be, I'll have to be really dialed in. I'll probably be saying more good things about Leon Edwards than I will be about Brady, just so that I don't sound like I'm being one-sided.
Yeah, I had a couple of questions about that. We'll get to it when you get to that fight on your list. But okay, so as we get to the cusp of the top five here, number six, at six, I'll reveal this one. I had the UFC on ESPN 65 main event, April 15th at the Apex, between Josh Emmett and Lerone Murphy. I believe, was that your number six as well?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, awesome fight. Josh Emmett, it's crazy to think he's been out. You know, Bryce Mitchell's going to have fought, I think, twice before he fights, like once after that knockout. This has been an issue for Josh Emmett. He's obviously insanely hard hitter and very good, but he's lost a lot of years to injury and time off.
Yeah, unfortunately. How old is Josh now? Do you know?
I think he's 39. Let me see. I'll look very quickly.
Lerone's not as young as I always think he is. I always think
he's 40. He turned 40 today, actually, Paul. March 4th.
That is Josh Emmett's birthday. Josh Emmett, who is a savage, man. I do love watching him fight. And I really love watching Lerone Murphy fight. He just had that dog fight with Danny Ige, I think, in his last fight, right? And he had to dig super deep. And I love seeing guys have to really dig in there to get a win like that and prove, like, you know, I want to keep this streak going. I want to be able to climb to the top. And if he can get past somebody like Emmett, as hard as that mother effer hits, then I think he'll be looking at some even bigger fights in his future. And I just like the kid. I like his mindset for the game. I like everything about him. So I'm glad to see that he's got another big spot like that coming up. That's going to be a fun one. I'll be working that one as well.
There you go. Getting you a little, your mind in the game here on which.
Right. It does help. It does help me kind of get focused on what's coming up.
Yeah. Do you think it's hard to say this with a division where Movsar Evloev exists, but is Murphy the biggest underdog, like biggest dark horse for like the title in the featherweight division?
I think he could be, man. I think the kid is really strong. His striking is really sharp. And as he proved in that fight with Dan Ige, when it gets into these crazy grappling exchanges and things like that, he's right on there with anybody at his level. So I think if he wins this one, like, then he's on a sneaky big win streak and beating, you know, really legit guys. I mean, Edson Barboza, if he can get Josh Emmett on that list, Dan Ige, who's a dog and just always brings the action every single time, then, you know, you're putting yourself finally, hopefully, into the names of the casuals out there that aren't necessarily watching every single event, because that's really what you want to get, right? The diehards are knowing who Lerone Murphy is, but when you start beating the bigger names and you do it maybe in spectacular fashion, that's how you start to get more well-known to the guys that are just kind of popping in and watching time to time.
Yeah, and featherweight could not be more wide open right now, so a big chance. 1 week before the new champion will be crowned at UFC 314, these guys headlines, so a good spot timing-wise as well for them. Okay, Paul, let's move on to the top five here. We're halfway through the list. Number five, I'll give you the floor for who you want to share for your number five spot.
Yeah, number five, I got UFC Fight Night 257, May 3rd. Corey Sandhagen gets Davison Figueiredo, which kind of came out of nowhere. I really thought that a lot of people were seeing that he was trying to get that Sean O'Malley fight, and that just didn't work out. But anytime Corey's fighting, I'm tuning in. And I've absolutely loved Davison Figueiredo ever since he moved up to bantamweight. I thought, you know, dude's a dog. He's a savage in there. And now that he's not cutting all that weight, he's able to push the pace a lot more. And I'm just glad to see Corey Sandhagen get a fight. I think this guy's still got a shot at becoming the best in that division, and he just needs a fight to get in there, whether it's Sean, whether it's Davison. Did he lose his last one?
Yeah, he lost to Piotr Jan.
Piotr Jan, right. But who's another freaking savage in that division? Yeah. So this is also a massive chance, massive, massive chance for Davison Figueiredo to kind of right that wrong in that last fight. And you go out there against that tall, lanky son of a bitch in Sandhagen, you can put him out and get a W, you're right back in the mix. Because losing to Piotr Jan in a fun fight, too. That was a fun fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was an excellent fight. The only, I guess, surprise to me about this booking is Davison Figueiredo, after he lost that fight, he was doing all these interviews. You know, there was the stuff back and forth with Pantoja. It seemed like the door was open for him to return to flyweight and get like an immediate title shot. I don't know why that didn't come to be, but I thought that was kind of the only curious thing. Like, you made your run at bantamweight. You lost the title eliminator essentially to Jan. That door is still there, but maybe he's just too old. The weight cuts are too much, but when it's all there, maybe you could suck it up one last time. I don't know.
I know that's the problem. I really do think it is too much for him. I mean, he's a big boy. I know when he's in there with some of the bigger bantamweights, you don't necessarily notice that, but you got to realize, imagine him cutting that 10 more pounds. I've seen him fight week when he's cutting, and it's just, I never understood how that guy could even get down to flyweight. So I think ultimately it's the right move for your career. You've done some great things already at bantamweight, and then you get matched up. Maybe they're like, hey, look, you can do this. You can go down to flyweight. Maybe you get that fight, or we can give you a guy like Corey Sanding, and you go and beat him. You're still on the track. You beat him maybe one or two more fights, and you could be fighting for the belt. So, and you don't have to cut that extra 10 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these guys are right there. Two people, I believe, Merab has not fought either. So this is a big chance for them. You know, if he continues to be the champ, you might get there by default.
That's huge right now, because Merab has beaten so many dudes in the division. When you're one of the guys that he hasn't fought yet and you have a spectacular, you can jump the line. I mean, you know this. You've seen it happens. If you go out there and one of these guys knocks somebody out cold, gets on that mic and starts saying the right things, you're either in there or you're a fight away from being in there. So I think it's a great opportunity.
Yep. So I had that fight at my number four. So flipped here, and then I'll read my number five now, which I think is your number four. So we'll kind of lines up perfectly here. Number five, I had the UFC 315 main event on May 10th, Bilal Muhammad and Jack Della Maddalena for the welterweight championship. As we said, not the fight we were expecting to headline this card for the welterweight title, but a big opportunity for Jack. Saw both these guys last week in Montreal. They both seem very ready. What do you think? Do you think this was the right fight to make if Shavkat was not available?
I do. I think Shavkat was the guy. He said no. Injuries, things that he's dealing with. Okay, fair enough. Jack's on a big winning streak. He was already set to be in a main event against the number one guy. You don't want to take Leon off of that card. First of all, it's in London, and he just handedly lost. Like he got pretty dominated by the champ. So that just doesn't deserve an immediate rematch. When there's fresh blood out there and somebody that's been on a really nice win streak, then you give him the fight. And it's an exciting fight. Jack's a phenomenal boxer, unbelievable striker. He's proven that he can deal with guys that try to take him down. And Bilal has just proven time and time again that the next scary guy that's going to dethrone him, that's going to take his win streak, he beats these guys. So I think it makes complete sense, and it opened up a lot for the welterweight division. Now Sean slides in for that spot against Leon. He's looked good in his last fight, and he's only got one loss, and it happens to be Bilal. So, yeah. You know, I think it really lines up nicely. If Bilal does win and Sean goes and wins, there's either Shavkat, Sean can fight one more time and then get the belt, or, you know, you never know with scheduling, and it. I think it opens up opportunities even for Leon if he goes out there and gets a big win. The welterweight division will be moving again. And I think more important than anything, that's what we're lacking in so many of these divisions in today's age, especially with guys vacating belts, Topuria moving up to 55. Islam wasn't sure what he wanted to do and who he's going to fight. It's like, it's nice to see a division finally. Okay, we move you here, who this, and we got things set up again.
Yeah, facts. If this situation of how this came together proved anything, it's that the UFC isn't going to wait for anyone if they're not available, which we already knew, yeah. And that Bilal will fight anyone that they throw his way to defend that
title. And Mike,
title,
I think so. That just goes to show you too, for all these fighters, like being ready, especially when you're in the top 10, even, I won't even say top five. Mm-hmm. If you're in the top 10, you haven't had a shot at that belt, you haven't fought that guy in particular, there's opportunities for you. If you're on a win streak and you're just winning fights and you're staying ready and staying healthy, you can really slide in the big spots. In today's UFC, you've got to be ready. You've really got to be trying to take care of yourself full time and really be a professional athlete, because they're going to call you. And if they call you and you say no, and you can't do these big opportunities, you're going to get passed by. You're going to get passed by. And maybe somebody that's not as ranked as you, high as you, and maybe not even as deserving as you, is going to get the spot because they said yes.
Yep. Diego Lopez and Movsar Ablyev, to look no further than that.
There you go.
Which I think might be coming right around the corner here as we talk about that situation at featherweight. Okay, we at my number three, as we crack things, I had Jamal Hill and Khalil Roundtree, who we spoke on, so don't need to add much more to that. So we'll circle back to you, Paul. Let's open up the top three here. What did you have at number three?
I got Alexander Volkanovski and Diego Lopez in my number three. I mean, you know, anytime Volk's fighting, He's got to be in my top of anything. I absolutely love this dude, man. I love me some Volk. I love his attitude. I love his social media. I love all these skits that he's doing, pretending to be the old man, his cooking with Volk. I follow all this stuff. If you've ever hung out and gotten to meet Volkanovski, he's just one of the best dudes in the whole entire sport. He's a girl dad like myself. And I love Diego Lopez. This dude's a gamer. He's ready to step in whenever, wherever he wants to fight. He wants to be the best, and he gets his opportunity. And I felt like he was a guy that when I started to hear the rumors of Topuria not wanting to fight at featherweight anymore, this is the first guy I think a lot of us thought of. Like, give this guy a crack at it, man. He's done so much for the company. He brings it every time. He's exciting as hell. He's also big and strong for this weight class, man. He's a big dude. And he's, again, a guy I've met so many times. Just cool as shit. Such a cool kid.
Yeah, and I mean, the stuff he did on International Fight Week, you know, taking Dan Ige at the last moment up, three weight classes for the contract he signed. I mean, these are all such big brownie points in his favor. So not surprised he's the other half of the fight. Volkanovski, I think I'm more curious about going into this, right? Because he, like, where does he go after all the time off? He's doing interviews now saying, like, I actually really enjoyed that time. And there were some days where I thought, like, maybe I'll just be good and never come back. And he's saying, like, I want to win the title. do a couple quick title defenses and that might be it. So it does feel like, you know, this was the guy that for so long, like short notice replacement, I'll fight anyone, I want to defend every couple of months. Now it's like such a different tone from him, understanding where he's at in his career and everything. I completely get it, but I don't know. Does this make you think differently about how Volkanovski is going to come into this fight?
I think it was good for Volk. I think he needed to calm down a little bit, right? He was so ready to jump at anything that came his way, as long as it was exciting and it was going to get him big paydays and get him, you know, a big, huge opportunities like he took on against Islam. And I think a little time off and maybe realizing like, you are at the end. But I think that can also really be a benefit for you, where you realize I don't have much time left. I do have to really seize these moments and capitalize on them. And he's got a guy in Diego Lopez who's as tough as shit, but I think it's definitely a winnable fight for a guy like Volkanovski, especially the longer the fight goes. Volk is just one of the hardest guys to deal with in rounds 4 and 5, right? So if he can really take his time and pace Diego and not let it get too crazy early, I think he could win that fight. And I think he will want to bounce right back. And maybe 3-4 months later, Volk's a guy, calm, let's defend it. Where do you want me to go? You got an Australia card, you're trying to do a pay-per-view down under? He's ready to go for that. And we're in that market a lot lately. We're trying to go back more. I know we're going to Perth again. We're always in Sydney. So I think there's a few more huge opportunities for Volkanovski to kind of regain that glory. And man, I love both those guys, but I really do hope that Volkanovski can kind of get to the top one more time, hold that belt and you know, recognize that it's almost over, because I want him to enjoy those daughters of his the older he gets. And I just want to see more shows from him, and I want to see him on the desk. I want to see him doing commentary. It's a guy I would love to work with in the future. I just think he's such a good brain for the sport, and he's just so charismatic and fun to talk to.
Yeah, one of the greatest of all time, Alexander Volkanovski. I had this fight number 2 on my list. I guess last thing to touch on, Paul, when that night comes and the title is vacant from Ilia Topuria, do you think there will be a better feeling or like taste left in the fans' mouth, your mouth, if it's one of these guys standing with that new belt in the center of the cage around their waist? Like, will it be a better feeling for the division with Topuria gone, with Volk being back there after he just lost to him over a year ago, Diego, who never fought and lost to Ilia? Will there be a better way forward with one of these guys holding that title?
Yeah, I think we'll see more consistency from the division again too, right? Yeah. You know, I love Ilia Topuria. I really do. I'm a massive fan of that kid's skills, and I've gotten to hang out with him after he knocked out Jai Herbert in London and his whole crew in his hotel room. It was pretty funny, actually. They're drinking champagne and smoking joints and all gold chained out, shirts open. But I was kind of disappointed, to be completely honest, when he did this. I thought there was a lot more left for him. I thought there was a lot more contenders left for him at 145. But hey, I don't know his weight cuts. I don't know what that was becoming like for him as a human. But at least if Volk or Diego gets it, one of these guys gets it, they're going to defend it. They're going to run it back. They're going to continue to fight, right? If it's a close fight, they can even run it back together again. So I think at least we'll have a champion who's going to stay in that division, especially Volkanovski, who's already said, if I get this, I want to rattle off some title defenses. And you love to hear that, right? I love the double champ stuff, but it's just getting carried away, in my opinion, Mike. It's just driving me a little bit nuts. As a guy that never even got to fight for the belt, and all I ever wanted in my career was to become a champion like any of these other athletes, right? It's like, oh, you just want to – some of these guys get a little spoiled. They want too much. It's like, man, you make money by being a champion, defending those belts. All these super fights, you just risk everything. You muddy up the division, so – I'd love to see one of these guys hold that belt. And I'm curious to see what happens with Topuria and who he's going to get, because we still don't know either on that side of things.
Yep. That's another topic for another day. Okay, Paul. So that was my number 2. Hit your number 2, and then we'll go on to the another one, which is
pure personal here. I was just in the gym today with Sean and seeing how hard he's working. And this is another guy that normally Sean's a bit of a perfectionist, and he wants things to be right. He wants the full camp because he trains so hard. He wants to be dialed in. He wants to do everything right. He's not normally a guy that wants to jump at something that comes at him in short notice. So when I saw him and he gotten this call and he was immediately like, I immediately said yes. As soon as he asked his wife, they just had a daughter. You cool if I go and take this fight? She's like, you have to take this fight. And I get chills even thinking about it. It's like, this is an opportunity for this kid. It took him a while to get to this spot where he's taking these kind of fights, but he's always in the gym. He's always training hard. I actually think this is the best case for him where he doesn't dwell on it. He doesn't have to overtrain. He's going to peak, I think, better than normal for himself. His weight is good. And Leon's a friggin' sniper. He's a savage in this division, and he's ranked number one. So for me, as a good friend of Sean's and somebody that's obviously just been a big fan of his career and fighting on CFFC cards with him, my last title defense for Cage Fury was his pro debut.
Wow.
So when I got signed to the UFC, my last fight with Cage Fury, it was his very beginning of his pro career. So that's how long me and this kid have kind of shared the mats together. And let me tell you what, now that I'm retired, I can say all this. This dude has beat my ass since he was like 19, 20 years old. He's the strongest kid I've ever trained with in my life. So I'm just glad. That's why that's number two for me. I know a lot of the regular fans are like, oh, but this is not the fight we even wanted. But for me, this is huge.
Yeah, I love that. One question about this fight, because everyone kind of said when this whole change-up happened with the cards, like, oh, did Leon get like the short end of the stick here, both like names-wise and stylistically? I'm looking at this being like Leon Edwards' past four fights were Kamaru Usman twice, Colby Covington, and Bilal Muhammad, who are obviously all, you know, grappling wrestlers, guys. If Leon isn't prepared for this type of style by now, after all those camps invested in, even if he may not have had the most weeks with this particular name, like all that should be foundationally built in by now, right? So I feel like 100%. There's no excuses if you can't stop takedowns and things like that.
100%. I mean, Leon's whole career has been spent on trying to stop guys from getting on his legs and taking him down, right? He's a sniper. He's a sharpshooter of a striker. He's not a volume striker. He's not a guy that goes out there and brawls, right? He's very calculated and very precise in his striking. So his whole career, he has dealt with guys like this. And like you said, the fights with Leon, the fight with Bilal, like he's been in camp for this for the last couple of years, basically preparing for this, or even more maybe. So there'll be no excuses for Leon. I do get that it kind of is the shit end of the stick though for him, where it's like, all right, I got to do this again. When I did have a striker and a guy like Jack that he can really kind of work on, how am I going to figure this guy's puzzle out on the feet? But you get an opportunity to show everybody that you can get back in there with a guy like Bilal if he keeps the belt and go right for another shot. And if Jack wins, you were already scheduled to fight him. So yeah. I think, you know, there is a lot of upside for Leon. He probably really wants Jack to win, honestly, in that Bilal fight. Because if Jack wins, if Leon beats Sean, that's a no-brainer for me that Leon gets that shot.
Yeah, I mean, Leon did say in an entry, I think, this week that UFC promised the winner of this fight with Sean Brady a title shot. I'm sure Shavkat and his team have something to say, but who knows what his injury situation is.
We talked about it before, man. You start saying no, just because you were the guy doesn't mean that you're going to be the guy. And that's the unfortunate part of the sport. It's now. That can all change. When you say no and you get, and sometimes it's not your fault. It can be an injury. And that's something you got to deal with. He's probably going to have to fight somebody else.
Well, my God, Paul, this ducktails perfectly well into what is our unanimous number one here. Saturday's UFC 313 main event between Alex Pereira and Magomed Ankalaev. Ankalaev was offered this fight at UFC 300 and he turned it down. Obviously had his reasons, Ramadan, all those things. But here we are. It's finally happening. I know people wanted this fight many times in 24. Pereira just did his crazy, insane schedule. I'm glad it's happening under these circumstances where it's full camp. No, he just fought 2 months ago, this, that, or the other thing. I guess the one thing is like Ramadan just did start last week. So I don't know, these next few days leading up to weigh-ins and fight night might be a little rough for Ankalaev, but we'll see how that goes. But nevertheless, this was the no-brainer for number one on this list. We've been waiting for this fight for a long time and I can't wait.
So intriguing, right? I mean, Alex is he's so much fun. His whole aura, we were talking about on the Believe You Me podcast, me and Mike, that I love how most of the time it's these brash, crazy guys, a lot of shit talk, all this fun, that's what hypes up. Pereira is the exact opposite of that. It's his quietness and his how stoic he is that captures everyone. And then the intensity at which he brings to the cage. And Ankalaev is just a true guy. He's the guy that we've all thought. If there's a guy that can beat him style-wise, that this is the guy. And we get to find out on Saturday night. And like you said, the right timing. Both guys coming in fresh, coming in ready to go, no excuses. And the whole Ramadan thing, I think a lot of these guys, especially since it's so close to the, from the start of Ramadan to the fight, I'm hoping that Ankalaev is just going to do, I've heard that they allow, like, if you just push back the amount of time. So maybe he's not going to do the full fasting and all of that kind of stuff the week of the fight, even though, I mean, it could kind of help you with that. Yeah. But I think on fight night is where that could be a lot of trouble if he does that. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. What's your thought on, like, the he needs to grapple Ankalaev element, and, like, you know, if he doesn't mix it up, it's going to be his demise. I guess I'll throw one note before you answer that. To this point in Ankalaev's UFC career, he averages less than one takedown per 15 minutes of fighting at a 31% accuracy. So it's not like he's a guy who's taking you down 11 times a fight, all that type of stuff, even when he does grapple.
No, he's not. He's not a high volume grappler. I mean, he's primarily in there striking with guys. Yeah. And I think that's okay. I think I was talking to Brady about it actually today in the gym. I was asking the guys, I was like, what do you guys think about this fight since it's coming up this weekend? And Sean's like, I think he's an idiot if he doesn't at least try and bring grappling into it. I do think that he's more than capable of handling himself on the feet. And I think that's important as well. I think in order to make the wrestling effective for him, he's got to engage with Pereira. He's got to get him thinking that we're going to strike. And it's in those moments and being calculated on when he uses those shots to mix it up. I think that he just needs to have the threat of the takedown there, even if they're not always successful, even if he doesn't really even want it. I do think that he has to at least put it into the mind of Pereira and let him know that I am capable of doing this. Maybe you get a takedown early and let him get up, whatever you got to do. But I do think it would be really silly to not approach it. Now, if he goes out and knocks him out, we all look silly, right? I mean, of course that's possible. But I do think that the game plan will be to mix in shots. I mean, I do.
What zone, like, is best for him to do his grappling from? Is it up against the clinch, or in the clinch, up against the fence? Is it shooting, you know, takedowns from a double leg? Is it diving for the ankle for an ankle pick from far away? Like,
yeah,
what do you think the best path for grappling
is? I think using his boxing and stuff to get in tight and kind of get a hold of him and wear on him a little bit on the fence, and then just threaten the takedowns. And even from out at the distance, I know Pereira switches, but it's going to be pretty much southpaw and orthodox, right? So if Pereira is in his orthodox stance, I think just attacking that single leg every now and then and just scooping it up, and even if it doesn't go to the ground, now all you've got to do is feign him and see what his reactions are going to be, right? That's what is so important with wrestling in MMA, is it's not necessarily about shooting out from distance, but just getting reactions from your guy when they think a takedown is coming. Where does his hands go? Does he look for the knee? What's his counter? What's in his mind when I just look at his legs? So I think just occasionally going for the leg, trying to get a hold of it, and just pushing him and getting in his face a little bit and not allowing him to just set in that, you know what I mean? When he starts to get into that relaxed zone that he gets into, F that. That's when he's scary. And the calf kick's one of his most dangerous weapons for Pereira, but southpaw orthodox, it's curious. Is he going to switch stances to try to go for that? Does that open up more opportunities for him to try to take him down, considering that usually with takedown defense, like for me, if I was southpaw and you tried to take me down, you're going to get it immediately. When I was in orthodox, I was so used to where my hips needed to go to defend shots. So there's a lot of little variables. That's why I'm so intrigued by this fight. I'm really curious to see what the game plans and the strategies from both guys are going to be.
Yeah, phenomenal insight there. A couple last things on this one. I think if Ankalaev wins, it's a pretty easy immediate rematch scenario. I think that's the way it would go, unless it's like a really bad KO and Pereira needs extended time off or whatever. But if Pereira wins here, I think he would tie Chuck Liddell for the second most title wins in light heavyweight history, not title defenses. I think he would need one more defense. But like, if you look at this division, the only thing that's like semi-interesting out there after this is the winner of Ullberg and Blachowicz. We already saw him against Blachowicz, but like after this, do you feel like his work is almost, I know we said the double champ stuff you don't love, the work is always ongoing, but is there anything interesting left for Pereira at 205 if he wins this?
I mean, rematches can be interesting, but as far as like, oh, it's got to be this guy, I really don't think that there's anybody right now. And I think for Ullberg, yeah, that's a young prospect coming up, an exciting guy. But I think
the coolest part of that would have been like, oh, Izzy is going to be in Ullberg's corner, like his teammate, but him and Pereira have squashed that whole thing. So like,
yeah, that's like not even
animosity there anymore.
It's not as interesting. And that's why I'm saying, that's why I worry about the whole situation for Tom, because let's say Pereira does go out there and you know, I don't think this is going to happen. Let's say he ices him, just puts him out cold. Then he's like, well, now I have earned my right to be the guy that's calling for moving up a weight class. And the guy who holds that belt is John Jones.
Yeah. You never know. And they would also give the UFC the option if John is playing that hard of hardball, they'd say, Alex will take that fight against Tom for half the money or something like that.
Yeah, so, right?
We'll see. Okay, Paul, before I let you go, obviously this is not on the list, but relevant to your former weight class at lightweight, just some thoughts on Justin Gaethje versus Rafael Fiziev. Did they go the right way on the replacement for this fight after Dan Hooker fell out? And I guess, what are your expectations out of Gaethje almost a year after being KO'd and maybe the greatest KO in UFC history by Max Holloway, and then Fiziev taking like a year plus off with injury, but saying he's been wanting to fight for a long time?
Yeah, that's what I do love about him being the guy that got chosen for this, because I had been hearing that about Fiziev, that he's been saying, like, I want to fight. And then, so obviously that means you're training, right? You at least hope so. So I think he's fit. I think he's ready to go in there. And I love Justin Gaethje for also being able to take this, right? I mean, this is a guy you already beat in a very hard fight. And this was a big opportunity for you to fight another big ranked guy in Dan Hooker, who's been surging again. And a lot of people just had so much hype on the violence that was going to be created in this fight. And then when that gets taken away from you, it can be a real buzzkill, and it can be hard to get motivated for a switch like that. So I think a lot more credit needs to be given to Justin Gaethje for being a gangster and going in there and taking this fight. And obviously credit to Fiziev for being willing to step in there with a maniac like Gaethje, who you've already been in there and shared the cage with and know what he brings to the table. And it's three rounds now instead of five, yes. Correct? And I think that's the right move. I think for Zeev coming in on short notice, you're making him make 155 already. Can't make him go in there and fight five rounds. And I heard Justin talking about how he wants to kind of go back to being a little bit more reckless, a little bit more crazy. So giddy
WSOF Gaethje is what you said. Is that a good idea? Or?
I think so, man. I think Justin's a guy where he thrives in the chaos. He thrives in just the mayhem of a fight. And I think he's gotten a little bit more technical. And in that first fight with Fiziev, I think he was trying to be a little technical. I think if he goes out there and makes it a little more violent, because I do think that Fiziev is probably slightly more of a technician when it comes to his kickboxing skills. So I think with a guy like that, you have to be a little crazy and a little violent in there. And that's what we all want to see from Justin. He's never been shy from saying that I'm not here for a long, I'm here for a good time. I'm not here for a long time. And he's that kind of guy. And I think if he wants to bring the true violence that he's capable of, I think that's the approach. And I do think Justin will get it done again. But I do love Fiziev. That's a guy that when I was still active, I always thought, man, that would have been a fun fight to get in there. Well, both those guys really, but I love both those guys. So much fun to watch. I'm glad that they got that co-main secured with an exciting fight.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Fiziev, I think I heard him say, like, he thought he fought really well in the first fight. It's like the final 3 minutes, I fought like an idiot, lost the third round, and then that cost me the fight. So it'll be interesting to see if he's trying to be more disciplined than the first fight, or Gaethje's going to try to be more reckless.
Yeah, it might be the opposite, right? It might be Gaethje going out there that gets a little crazy, and Fiziev might be more dialed in, and it's going to be violent. It's going to be a violent fight, no matter what. I don't think we're really losing too much with the switch. I was very bummed when Dan Hooker, when I found out, when I woke up and I saw that, I was like, this is a joke. There's no way this is real. And unfortunately, it was.
Yeah, I mean, when you announce the news on your daughter's YouTube channel, it's you don't really know if we're supposed to take it seriously.
But credit to him, too, man. He's such a... I love his attitude, right? He's like, I hurt my hand. Like, what are you going to do? Like, there's nothing you can do. You can only dwell on it, or you can just move on and wait for the next opportunity. And Dan's had these moments throughout his career time and time again where he's had big setbacks and he's bounced back stronger than ever. So we'll see Dan get another exciting, cool fight when he's healed up.
For sure. Awesome, Paul. I think we recapped it all pretty well here these next few months. I guess you said your next one's London, right?
Yeah, not working till London, and then two in April. I'm working that April 5th, and then Kansas City as well. And then it's full steam ahead from there on. This is like my nice little break for a big chunk of time.
Yeah, so in London, when Leon and Sean are fighting, does John Gooden have to sit between you and Bisping while you call that fight?
No, man, it's going to be so tough. It's so tough for me. Because I do think I do a good job of really not Aaron, I mean, you know, there's always critics out there that will say the opposite, but I think that
you took yourself out of the commentary booth one time, right? Under those situations,
was it? I would do it mostly with Jarrett. For some reason, with Jarrett Gordon, I just get so damn emotional. Me and him were even through more certain, like me and Sean. Sean's a pretty dialed in, his head on his shoulders. Whereas Jarrett, we've had some crazy situations. I was there for a lot of his recovery and in and out of rehab, and then he bounced back and he'd get relapse again. So like when I see him fight, there's just a part of me that almost looks at him like a brother out there fighting. So whereas Sean, I kind of trust, I know he's got it all dialed in. Whereas Jarrett, I just, for some reason, I've got this connection with him where I just don't like seeing him get hurt. I don't like seeing him in a fight where it's not going his way. So although nowadays I think I'd be okay, but the Bobby Green one, when there was the headbutt, I lost it a little bit on that one. And I had to apologize to Bobby Green, you know. That was wrong on me.
King Green, who returns to the octagon this weekend as well in the UFC 313 opener.
An amazing fight, dude. Good.
Yeah. Perfect segues all over the map here, Paul. So appreciate you being this. You can see you and Bisbing are just killing it over there. You got the podcast flow down now, man. So appreciate you being here. Hopefully this is the first of many, Paul, and looking forward to UFC 313 this weekend. We'll see how it all unfolds. Going to take a quick break and then I'll be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much again to Paul for his time. I thought that was a blast. UFC's got some big time main events coming up here, but clearly we agree, nothing bigger on the coming schedule than Alex Pereira versus Magomed Ankalaev. What a fascinating light heavyweight title fight coming up at UFC 313 this weekend. As I said off the top, I will be there on the ground in Las Vegas helping out MMA Junkie with their coverage. Make sure you follow me on this channel on YouTube. Subscribe, rate, comment to the podcast, whatever you can do. And then if you want to hit me up on social media as well, at Mike Bon on X, at Mike Bon MMA on Instagram, and on all the other platforms as well. I can follow along with the coverage I will provide from UFC 313. And then after that, we'll be back here next week with another great guest, another great show back here by the Bonfire.